This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Welcome to another episode of the ILTA podcast, Technical Competencies. My name is Beth Ann Stubbe, and I'm the Director of Publications and Press. And today I am thrilled to be joined by Michelle Hook-Dewey. Michelle is the Legal Technologies Librarian and Associate Professor of Legal Research at Georgia State University College of Law. Michelle, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me today, Beth Ann.
I'm really glad that you could join us. Please just tell us a little bit about yourself.
I tend to introduce myself professionally as a lawyer by training, a librarian by trade, and a technologist by accident. I don't really come from a technology background really at all, except for the ways that technology, I think, intersects with information management or librarianship, but not really in a traditional sort of technologist sense. A couple years ago, when I moved to Atlanta, I took a job with a large law firm where I had the opportunity to sort of intersect all my librarian skills with the firm's technology department. And I was just forced to kind of learn ad hoc about how all of these information management skills, technologies, really intersected with all the innovation that the firm was doing. And now I'm back at Georgia State, trying to think about how I can use that knowledge to help lawyers as they're coming into the profession, think about the skills that they'll need to have to be technologically competent.
I think that's probably the coolest way to not only come into this, but certainly to set yourself up a little early here now as an SME in competency. I think that this is going to be really cool. And I do think that intersection probably puts you in a really unique position to help out students. So let's dive right on in. Let's talk about the ABA Rule 1.1 that states that lawyers must provide competent representation. Competent is an interesting word, I think, when we talk a lot about technology, but specifically about lawyers. How is Georgia State preparing those future generations of lawyers to enter the workforce? You have a really unique perspective here.
So at Georgia State College of Law, we're pretty fortunate to have a lot of top-down buy-in when it comes to thinking about technology skills and how we need to be preparing future lawyers. So at the highest level, we actually offer a certificate program in legal analytics and innovation. And that program really allows students who are very interested in this to sort of self-select. They can take 16 credits from a menu, a pretty expansive menu of substantive and skill-based legal technology courses. So those range from, you know, substantive law classes on blockchain or data privacy, or courses that focus more on perfecting basic software application and skills, or survey courses that focus on technology tools and uses in law practice. But the beauty is that we have this robust program, yet any of our Georgia State law students can take these courses. So a good number go through the whole program and, you know, get the certificate, but all the students have access to a broad exposure of tech skills and tech topics. And then also the library really works to ensure that in our collection, students have free access to tech training programs. And this summer, we're actually launching something called 1L Tech Ready out of our analytics and innovation initiative. And so that's an opportunity for our incoming students who have all that sort of eager energy, like they're super pumped to get ready to start law school, but doesn't happen till August. So we're going to send some information out to them and some resources that will help them get some tech skills to prepare both for law school. But I think that those are going to be some of the skills that will translate into helping them prepare for practice. Really, I think that is a lot.
You guys do an incredible amount. That's the coolest thing I think I've heard on some of these podcasts. You guys are preparing students kind of not only ad hoc, but if they really want to dive into an analytics and data side, I definitely could use them in our tech survey science team. But I do think there's a lot there that's going to prepare them. This competency rule is certainly something that when they enter the workforce, they'll be well prepared for.
Yeah, and I think we're also, you know, we're fortunate because we have the LAII program and certificate path. We are really invested in having different people with skill levels, different resources that really affects everybody from the top down. So we're then always thinking of different ways that we can broaden you know, one-off learning opportunities, even opportunities for like CLEs in the community, because a lot of lawyers are practicing now with this expectation, but they did not probably go to a school where they had the opportunity to learn any of this.
I can't imagine the change over in just a few years for competency, for programs, the tools and the products that are out in the marketplace that weren't out 5 years ago is incredibly impressive. I do think that technical competency has massively evolved. Okay. How do you feel? You know, coming out of this and our conversation prior to starting the recording, which I always wish I had recorded because they're always so good. But let's talk a little bit about how you kind of technical competency, in your opinion, has evolved and where you kind of see some of the learning progressions for students going next.
So I think it's evolved. The most basic way, I think, is just that, you know, a dozen plus years ago when I graduated law school, no one ever spoke to me about tech skills or to my peers. That was just not on my radar, really even employers' radar. But really shortly after that, right, Casey Flaherty was everywhere talking about the legal tech audit, and then law firms, and I think probably most importantly, clients, right, started to like perk up and they got very interested in quote unquote tech skills. But those skills were, I think, really just asking attorneys to demonstrate some little bit of fluency or sophistication in basic software or applications. Like, are you being effective enough in your sort of use of Word or Excel that I'm not paying you for, you know, taking too much time to do administrative tasks? But now I think it's kind of moved on to not just this sort of basic application or basic skills, to really having to have an understanding or a fluency of the marketplace of technologies, how they work, some knowledge about the underlying technology that goes inside of it. I mean, I always tell my students, everybody does not have to be a builder, but all lawyers have a duty to understand that marketplace of technologies and where and how they intersect with your work and your clients' issues. So here's a great like rip from the headlines example is that MATA, I think is how it's pronounced, MATA case, the one in New York right now where that attorney is facing sanctions because he submitted all these false claims or cases in a filing because he relied on ChatGPT. And, you know, I think there might be space for ChatGPT in legal research and writing for lawyers, but a small amount of knowledge about how it works or what it does, what it doesn't do, its strengths and its failings, man, that would have saved these two attorneys a lot of trouble. And I think the other evolution that's a lot slower, and I really want to see more traction, is that you're starting to see law school buy-in. I mean, a program like we have at Georgia State, and we're not the only one. There are other schools who are really starting to think about this, right? This idea that if we are training future lawyers, we can't do that in a techless vacuum anymore. The marketplace is demanding that of their graduates, and over 40 jurisdictions, right, have adopted that ethics rule that more specifically demands it. So it's a work in progress, and, you know, little horn tuning, Georgia State, very progressive at the student programmatic level, but we have a lot of other schools who are doing that. We have a fair amount that are acknowledging it, but I think we still have a lot of schools that are faltering in this space, and that's a real disservice, I think, to students. So I think there's a lot of work to do. So it's an evolution in process.
I think you're absolutely right. It's that evolutionary bit where the regulation and laws aren't going to be able to catch up, at least in any level of, you know, the next couple of years, I would guess, judging by how long it takes to, you know, pave my driveway. But yeah,
because it's like the short answer is that it's evolved from not being on the radar to being prevalent almost everywhere. But it's still so ill-defined and not uniformly taught or enforced as a skill set. And that's where I think we still have a lot of work to do.
I think there's a lot of work to be done on the ethics side. But I also, you know, kind of as a publisher, I always worry about copyright. And mm-hmm. I do think that there's a huge component to that, that not only from a technical competency part we're not talking about, but that does go back very quickly to, you know, if you're citing something, I hope it's real. I mean, ignoring the plagiarism aspect, let's hope that this is an actual, you know, case that can be, you know, found anywhere, that we're not just, you know, writing in footnotes just for the heck of it. But I think that goes back to your very good point about education, but that's student education to a large part. Let's talk a little bit about faculty education.
Yep.
How will that have to evolve in your perspective? Because it's not just what happens to the students, and especially as they go into whatever firm or, you know, government role, corporate role, however they're going to evolve. What happens to the faculty that, you know, has been teaching for 5, 10, 20 years? It's an emeritus professor. How are we going to have to continue their education?
So that's a really good question. And I think the answer is kind of the same in terms of how do we deal with the lawyers who are already in the marketplace, right? And are not currently enrolled in school, right? But they're going to be held to those same standards now, even if they've already been practicing 10, 20, 30 years. And I think for us at Georgia State, you know, one thing we do is our faculty within the Legal Analytics and Innovation Initiative, we do lunch and learns with our faculty. We, as a faculty, also as a whole College of Law faculty, have conversations about technology, have lots of conversations about ChatGPT. So I think you have to make opportunities, you know, like CLE style opportunities, but you also need to make sure that your faculty are having those conversations. And the other thing is, I think, really connecting with people in these spaces, practitioners who are working with these tools, the vendors themselves, and making sure that, again, how I said, not everybody has to be a builder. I think that's also true for faculty, right? Not everybody has to teach legal tech. However, we all have a collective responsibility to understand that it intersects with almost every class you will take. And so I did a training for our faculty at Georgia State where I talked about how you could take your entire syllabus and insert some tech competency without really having to change anything by just finding these sort of natural things of what you already are teaching, right? What you've been teaching for 30 years, right? Where does it intersect with a technological competency or an ethics consideration about a tool that might be in the marketplace or a sort of practical application that is now done by most attorneys leveraging some sort of technological resource? And then how can you add that component in? You know, that's what guest lectures are for. That's what readings are for. Sometimes it's just giving students the opportunity to have that conversation. And I think the reason that law schools have slowly evolved in this space is exactly for what you're saying, right? That faculty don't always feel like confident in this space because it's new to them too. And we like to teach, I like to teach what I'm comfortable with. So I think we have to tell faculty and make a space for faculty to go and learn and understand that they don't have to be experts, right? They don't have to be builders. They don't have to be masters, but they have to provide that conversation and help their students understand that, again, we can't live in this techless vacuum anymore. That's not where they're going to be practicing. So even your substantive rules of civil procedure or ethics or contracts, right? Those are all actually going to be affected by technologies, and we have to make that space.
I think that making space is probably the important part from this. But I also think that goes back again to one of the pieces that you said earlier about the idea that these tools have changed the way that we look at law. I do think there's a space here also for people to use the tools, not just as tools, but as something that they can learn with and from. I don't know that, you know, generative AI or whatever version of ChatGPT you'd like to kind of work with is something that can only remain in a vacuum. I do think that there has to be that willing suspension of disbelief where we say, all right, this is today. Where are we going to be in 2025 or 2027? If we look at that 5-year journey, Michelle, where do you think we're going to end up?
So I don't know where we're going to end up, but I think that is the beauty and challenge, right, of technology is that, you know, it's always following that cycle and you never know, like, what is the real hype versus what is sort of the sustainable trend? You know, people thought email wasn't going to last. People thought, you know, beta was where it was at, right? That we never really know which things are going to last. What I think is most important is actually not getting stuck on any singular, you know, type of technology, right? ChatGPT is the technology of the day. It doesn't matter whether it's ChatGPT, something else that we can't even imagine yet. The importance is that we actually have to train lawyers and law students to learn how to think critically about technology, right? The most important skills aren't really stuck to any one platform, tool, or emerging tech. It's, do we understand how to evaluate technology? Do we understand how certain things are interoperable with other systems? Do we understand, you know, where any technology might be sort of interwoven with a certain requirement that we have for ethical or practice standards? And so if we can train students how to do that, I think then generally it doesn't really matter where we end up. You know, when I'm not teaching legal tech classes, I teach legal research to first years. And I think there's a lot of similarities between how I think about a lawyer's responsibility to understanding technology and harnessing technology or using it in their work, or having this sort of fluent mindset to accept that it's always going to be changing around them, and how I teach them about research databases, right? Which is that I teach them, I know you want me to show you all the bells and whistles that Westlaw or Lexis or Bloomberg has in their platform, but that's not what matters, right? What matters is understanding sources of law. What matters are your core skills about, you know, retrieval and connection among sources. So it's these core skills that then make them empowered to go out, because in the 12 plus years I've been in the legal universe, 15 years, I think I've seen four versions of Westlaw, right? So it's like, that doesn't matter. It's preparing people to understand how to evaluate and interact with and think critically about technology and not get stuck on a singular tool or type.
That sounds exactly like how ABA 1.1 should be written about competency, not getting stuck on just one thing, but being able to have a broader scope. Michelle, this was awesome. I am looking forward to speaking with you again as we head into kind of our library programs with ILTA. I am deeply grateful for the conversation today. Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.